Hail Cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm so good, and I have great news, Josh, for the listener. Since last we potted, you were sick. You had your Michael Jordan flu game episode.
That's right.
With part one of our team previews. Since then, you have had many night sweats. You've ingested all sorts of weird medicines. And yep. I'm told that you have gone on a vision quest.
Yes.
And the information you're about to dispense on this episode of Always Cheating is going to clarify so many questions about the upcoming FPL season. I just can't prepare the listener enough for what's
That's
about
true.
To happen.
Be ready for in-depth discussion of teams E through N. On a quick side note, I will say I had no idea. I had strep throat for the first time ever. I thought strep throat was like a bad sore throat. I did not realize that strep throat was like a full body, like I don't know what was going on. It was insanity. It was absolutely insanity for days and days.
You have a young child, so maybe you would know better than me. But is strep throat one of those things where if you get it as a kid, it's just a bad sore throat, but if you get it as an adult, it's terrible?
Yeah, like chicken pox or something. I don't know, and it's definitely my kid who gave it to me, I think, because like when I think of strep throat, I do think of a fourth grader. I don't think of an adult man with an adult podcast. But
And this is what we're talking about. We're talking about adult podcasts for adults who play fantasy sports games.
That's true.
FPL, it's on its way back. If you haven't already, get on that Fantasy Premier League site and join the Always Cheating Super League. It's the league of leagues. It's our mini league open to all of our listeners. The more the merrier. More the merrier. We already have back. We're already back up to like 4,500 managers. And I don't want to stop until we hit 10,000 managers, Josh.
10K. 10K is the goal. All right. 10K. We should get like a little ticker on our website, you know, that just like they used to have in those old like GeoCity websites, you know, they had like a number of visitors. And it just ticks up with the number of people, you know, who joined the Always Cheating Super League. I mean, it had to be kind of slow, I would think. You know, like those GeoCity ones would go pretty fast. You know, I think they were just kind of making up those numbers.
Trust me, Josh, it's always cheating. It's not going to go very fast. But you can go to our website, alwayscheating.com, or any of our social feeds to get our league code. But if you've got a pen and paper, write this code down. It's DTZ277.
Wow. You're saying this like no one who's listening like can go to our website or social media or any of the million places where they can just like push a button and do this. But yes, that's the code DTZ277. Brandon, as I mentioned very briefly a moment ago, this is part two of our three-part team previews. Broke them up into three parts this year because it's too overwhelming to do 10 at a time. In this podcast, we're actually only doing six teams, but each team, well, maybe not every single one of these teams. We do have to cover Newcastle as part of this podcast, but, you know, Manchester United, Man City, Leicester, Liverpool, all of these teams, you can do an entire Everton, yeah. I mean, you could do half have done an entire podcast on all of these teams, right? I mean, Man City alone, you could do an entire fantasy podcast on. So we're going to go just talk about those six teams today, and then we'll follow up next week with the final, you know, the final team preview as well. A couple promoted teams in there, so that's what we're going to get into. And just a quick reminder before we do the Patreon update: the Slack is back. It never actually went away, but it's I got my little like my little update this week on how things are doing, and they had like a 90% jump in traffic just in the last week or so. I mean, everyone is back posting their teams, talking about what's going on in the you know the Premier League and you know across Europe, and there was a Women's World Cup thread. Congratulations to the U.S. Women's team, by the way. Lots going on there. So if you'd like to support the podcast or just take advantage of all those features, including a bonus podcast, Slack, you'll see all the various levels. If you go to our Patreon page, it's patreon.com/alwayscheating.
Yeah, and a quick thank you to our new Patreon subscribers at the Lord Sorloth level. Welcome, John Brunel, Liam, and Feng Shi. And our new Pookie patrons, James Verberg, Left Foot Only, Kijitel Kultum, apologies, my friend, but we do welcome you all the same. Martin Wilsden and Graham Griffiths, and thanks for the tip, Dan White. We do appreciate it. if there isn't a tier for you, be like Dan, just throw a buck in the jar and be on your merry way. We do appreciate it all the same.
That's right. Just a quick sub reminder, even though we have changed those Patreon tiers, if you're a Patreon before July 1, nothing actually changes for you. You have all the same, what you're paying every month and the access that you have, all that stuff. None of that changes at all.
Awesome. Okay, so what we have coming up, Everton, followed by Leicester, Liverpool, Man City, Manchester United, and then the big one, Newcastle. Have you heard the good news? Matt Ritchie is now classified as a defender, Josh.
I know. You know, the thing is, we're bad mouthing Newcastle, but I did the notes for Newcastle, and I actually went out of my way to try to be positive. Because okay. I was like, everyone's cool. Expecting us to just run them down the entire time. Let's try to find some fun notes. All right. At the very least, we can talk about Jamal Lascelles. So let's table that for now. Let's take a quick break and then let's get right into the podcast. Brandon, we're back. And you're actually going to kick things off here. So let's talk about Everton.
Yeah, Everton. I'm excited to talk about Everton. And it's a mea culpa. Last season, I really schadenfreude is the name of the feeling toward Marco Silva. And I felt he had a really rocky start to the season at Everton. And I claimed that he was a bit of a snake oil salesman. But you have to admit, near the end of the season, Everton really found their groove. And I think they salvaged things with their fans. I think they found a cohesive unit, even though it did involve the likes of Calvert-Lewin leading the line. Maybe they can improve on their striker situation in the offseason. But I think I just came away from the Everton feeling at the end of the last season feeling much better about them. So the theme of my Everton coverage is going to be positive, spoiler alert. And that has helped quite a bit by their opening run of fixtures. It's an away match in game week one, but it's against Palace, who are rocking a little bit. You know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is gone. Who knows what's going on with Zaha? And then it's Watford, Aston Villa, Wolves, Bournemouth, and then another promoted club in Sheffield United. Very decent opening run, particularly. And you talked about this, Josh, in our 10 questions out of the season podcast about how Pickford jumped out at you as a great goalkeeper because we can get locked into thinking about our game week one squad of like, this has to be a squad that gets us till Christmas. While most of us will actually trigger a wild card around game week 6, 7, 8, if not earlier. So why not just think about Everton in this 5 to 6 game week chunk? And if we do, their defense is looking really appealing. So let's just quickly talk about the defense. Pickford, I mentioned, priced at $5.5 million last year, 14 cleans, and the big takeaway for Mr. Pickford is 3 pen saves. He's a pen save merchant, and I think 5.5 long term feels kind of expensive. Maybe if you're comparing Everton to a top four club like Chelsea, even though Chelsea's season is very much in doubt right now, does Pickford at 5.5 compare to Kepa at 5.5? I don't know. But I think like you, I kind of like Pickford for the opening run of fixtures for this season.
And, yeah, I think we talked about this on a previous podcast. And, fortunately, his numbers got a little inflated. I think because of the penalty saves that he had last season, it made it seem like, those penalty saves are important and but I do find penalty saves to be kind of fluky in general and not necessarily a good indicator of how good a keeper you are, how good of a fantasy asset you are. They're just very hard to sort of bank on. They're not the kind of points you can bank on seeing, like anybody could in theory, save a pen. So,
Josh?
No, because I'm like 5'7" and I guess 5'8". I'm 5'8". 5'8" with shoes, I could not save a pen. Maybe I could save it like only if someone tried like one of those like Panenkas and I just stood completely
and you
still,
stood in the middle of that.
Yeah, exactly.
The ultimate technique. You're about as tall as Kepa then if you're that tall.
That's true.
And fun.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was going to say that, you know, I mean, Pickford should be 5 million and he's 5.5. And he's, this is like, this is the fun trick that the game does every year is that they take every player that you want and they make them 0.5 more than you want to spend, you know? Yeah. And then you have to decide which players you still want, even though they're 0.5 more than they should cost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just a fun fact that really doesn't have any bearing on our planning, but Jonas Lossel, one of my favorite never had him, never wanted him keepers at Huddersfield, is going to be playing backup to Pickford, priced at probably at 4.5 when he gets added to the game. The big discussion we need to talk about with Everton defense, Joshua, are the fullbacks. Keane, Yuri Mina, Kurt Zuma, forget about it. No, thank you. It's all about Lucas Dean and Seamus Coleman, right?
That's right. Yep.
So what do we need to figure out? Dean is priced at 6 million and Coleman is at 5.5. Is it worth the 0.5 price savings? So you look at Dean's output versus Coleman's last season, and Coleman still slow in coming back from his leg breaking injury, but he finished the season really strong. Maybe that had something to do with Everton's stronger finish. I don't know. But Dean finished on 4 goals, 5 assists, and 22 bonus, where Seamus Coleman finished on just 2 goals and 2 assists and 12 bonus. Fun fact, both Dean and Coleman had 1 own goal each. So they're square there. For me, it's kind of cut and dry, and I want to know what you think about this. But Dean just is, he was merciless with his set-piece delivery. He led the entire Premier League, all 20 teams, in crosses with 280 crosses. That's 9 more than second place Ryan Fraser at Bournemouth. And that is just, that's worth at least 0.5 to me over Seamus Coleman.
Yeah. I don't know if you read, there was this, as a post, I think it was actually originally on a Fantasy Football Scout and then it got shared out, but it was by Abu Bakar Siddiq. And it was basically the case for Lucas Dean. And it is one of those cases that is so compelling. It reminds me of last year. I read a Stats Bomb article before the season started about Richarlison and what he was going to do when he joined Everton. And it was, I think it was written by, I can't remember who it was now, but anyway, the article was so compelling and made it seem like he was such a great fit that there was no version of my team that didn't have Richarlison in it in game week one last year. Cause I was just so sold. And I kind of felt that way after reading this post. It was just like, he just kind of does it all. He just kind of does everything you'd want as a fantasy asset. Right. And then, so he does all the attacking stuff, I should say. And then you combine it with the really strong fixtures to start the season. And he's kind of the perfect player, you know, I think for early on. 6 million is expensive, but not ridiculous. And in Coleman, you know, Coleman's an injury risk. You know, Coleman doesn't really have as much attacking threat as he used to have. So, this is a long way of me saying that, yes, I do agree with you. And I wouldn't consider the center backs either. It would only be if I was going with, like, you know, a really heavy Man City kind of Liverpool midfield, you know, defense. And I want to go with Pickford instead as like my Everton defensive coverage. Would I not have Dean? But it is, I'm planning to have Dean in my squad.
So that's kind of a curveball going into game week one this season. Dean would be the pick over Pickford long term. Would it be crazy to double up on Dean and Pickford just to go strong in this first month of the season with the great fixtures?
I don't know. I mean, the fixtures are good, but they're not that good. And I mean, they had 14 clean sheets in 38, which isn't that strong. And I don't know. That seems like too much. I have to admit that in general, I'm high on Lucas Dean. I'm not as high on the rest of this team. As some people are. And I'm sort of curious. Let's talk about the midfield now, because I'm curious what you've got, like, actual stats here. So I'm ready to listen.
Yeah. In the midfield, it comes down to just the choice between Sigurdsson and Richarlison. I think Richarlison I was shocked that he came in as high as 8 million. But now the case that we have to make here is, are you a cautious player with Sigurdsson, or are you more of a maverick with Richarlison? So last season, 13 goals, 6 assists for Sigurdsson. Richarlison also 13 goals, but just 3 assists. But the significant outlier here is that Richarlison had created, or he'd not created, he had more chances on goal, many more chances than Sigurdsson had. So I think the question that you have to ask is Richarlison going to kick on this season? If you mm-hmm. think Richarlison is performing at his level, and we didn't see too much of him in the Copa America with Brazil this summer. He did score a late penalty in the final. But what more do we know about Richarlison?
Confidence-boosting penalty, Brandon, right at the end.
It particularly for attacking players, it is a game of confidence, mm-hmm. isn't it? So I don't know, Would you grant any credit? Yeah, I would.
I knew where you were going, and I just decided to cut you right off because, yes,
go on.
I think that Richarlison is interesting as an asset because I think that even if you think that Richarlison is kind of something like a worst case version of Richarlison, which is that he starts every season like a house on fire and then he sort of tails off as the season goes on. That to me does not preclude him from being someone I would consider early on in the season because he starts off like a house on fire. He's done it 2 years in a row, could he do it 3 years in a row? I see no reason why not, especially given their fixtures. And his price doesn't really scare me off him that much. I mean, 13 goals and 3 assists last season. It's I'm not really sure how he comes in at 8 million and Will Zaha comes in at 7 million when Zaha had something like 11 goals and 10 assists, but whatever, So I guess it's like projected based on Everton being a stronger team this year or something. But I think that, I think there's a real case to be made for Richarlison. It is I don't want to say it's an emotional case, but it's a case that you can't make with numbers. Is there a case that it's like a gut pick or something? I don't know. It's like, I feel like he might do better. You know,
I can try to make the case with numbers for you because as I was saying, Richarlison had more chances on goal last season than Sigurdsson did. Therefore, if you think that Richarlison is growing and becoming a better player, then he will absolutely outperform Sigurdsson this season. If he's able to take those chances, the shots off target become shots on target, then he will definitely improve his goal output. And an interesting point, and you can talk more about this with Leicester City, the next team, James Maddison created 99 chances last season. That's 26 more chances than Sigurdsson created, 73 last season. So if you're thinking about Sigurdsson being value at 8 million because he's on all these dead ball situations, Maddison is a million cheaper at 7 million. Leicester doesn't have this enticing and opening run of fixtures, but it's just sort of putting Sigurdsson in a bit more context. Of course, Sigurdsson having penalties, that's the whole argument. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like you're kind of helping talk me into the Richarlison pick too.
It wouldn't be a numbers one quite as much, but I don't know. He just starts strong, and yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely thinking about it. What about let's talk about the forwards first before I go on another rant.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking past all these other midfielders because it's just going to be a free-for-all and the greater amount of the output is going to come from Sigurd or Richarlison. Yep. But yeah, the forwards, Calvert-Lewin could be an interesting value pick at 6 million, but I mean, I like Calvert-Lewin generally. I mean, he's legendary for winning all of his aerial duels. Mm-hmm. That's like a weird secret weapon that he has, but just 6 goals and 5 assists last season.
He looks small, right? Like you wouldn't think of him as a small frame because he's got a small frame.
Totally. But will he still be the starting striker for Everton in game week 1? Rumored links to Malcolm at Barcelona. That seems kind of ambitious. I think they're asking for something like 45, 50 million for him. Diego Costa, if you go to the transfer market page, Diego Costa is linked to Everton. That would be kind of wild.
That's wild.
And fun.
It's funny because one of the best Diego Costa games at Chelsea was, remember that classic Everton match where he scored. It was like a hat trick, or at least a brace. Somebody
was scoring every like 10 minutes in that match.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also seems likely that they might sign this young Argentine striker, Adolfo Gaik, who he's done nothing, and he's probably not the type that would displace Calvert-Lewin.
A team with no offense to Calvert-Lewin, but a team with Everton's ambitions can't go into the season with Calvert-Lewin as their kind of sole option up front, can they? I mean, then you're in like a Southampton type situation. You know, I feel like someone's going to come in. You know, someone will be available in the bargain bin or something. You know, like some club will need money to fund another move. You know, and they'll sell off. Some 31-year-old striker or something. So I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
Right. So the big takeaways here are if Everton's going to kick on, they have to be better away from home. They only won five matches on the road last season, but I think it's Lucas Digne would be the first nailed on player. And then the choice is yours between Sigurdsson and Richarlison.
There you go. And we're both leaning in Richarlison, aren't we? How interesting.
I guess after this podcast, Sigurdsson is in my current draft, but all right, I have to talk to my friend Chris about this.
all right, Leicester City, team 2 of 6. Okay, so Leicester City, fixtures briefly, it's a mixed bag. They're fine. Two fixtures are really bad. One is okay. They play Wolves. Wolves at home. They play Sheffield United away, Bournemouth home, Man United away. So, and then they play Chelsea away in Game Week 2. So it's like a total kind of roller coaster, you know, up and down run of fixtures. So that's not really what's interesting about Leicester, though. I think what's interesting about Leicester is they are going for it in a very big way right now. They're bulking up. They have young, talented players. They are acquiring veterans kind of a mix of both, actually. They've got someone like Yuri Tielemans who's coming in, who's a really talented young player. They have someone like a Jose Perez who's got, you know, great track record of being able to score goals in the Premier League. They have guys who
have a decent track record.
Okay, now it's a decent track record, but he scored 12 goals last season. You know, it's not bad.
Yes.
8 goals the season before that. Not terrible. So, but he's a complimentary player. I mean, they're not going to build the team around a Jose Perez, you know, but he's a good option for your toolbox or whatever.
Yeah. So he's the new Okazaki.
Right. He might be. Yeah, exactly. So they're building. They still have Vardy. They have, you know, all these talented young fullbacks. You know, there's just a lot to like about this team. And, you know, I think Brendan Rodgers is actually a somewhat underrated manager. You know, he's like a little too like David Brent, you know.
And yeah, so he's too like easily sort of, memed to be outright respected is his problem.
Exactly. He's a little too like Phil Neville, I guess, right, to make it more updated comparison. Yes. So, yeah. So, okay, let's talk about this team a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about some of the players that are already on the team. Okay, and then we'll talk about some of the new signings. Okay. So you got Jamie Vardy, 18 goals and 5 assists last season. I spent the first two-thirds of the season saying that he was washed up, saying that he was done, and then just like the dam broke, and he just had a fantastic final third of the season, really took off. And, some of that was Rodgers. I think it started before Rodgers was even there. But certainly once Rodgers was there, you know, really took off. So 18-5 last year, he had 20 goals and 2 assists the year before that. So, you know, consistently right in that 20 goal range, came in at a very reasonable $9 million price. Even though I'm not really seeing anybody, you know, I'm not seeing him in a ton of squads right now. You have James Maddison, who you and I both projected would be at $7.5 million in our price prediction pod. Actually came in at $7 million, which is very reasonable price. And $7 million, Brandon, he had 7 goals and 7 assists last season. So,
yeah. And as I was mentioning, comparing him to Sigurdsson, he 26 more chances created than the Icelander. So I think that represents some pretty damn good value for money at $7 million for James Maddison.
Yeah. I'm liking like the value up and down here. I mean, even just moving on, you have Ben Chilwell who, came in at $5.5 million. He's kind of, He's kind of like a Robbo. He's got a Robbo like Andrew Robertson aversion to scoring goals. He has not scored a goal the last 2 years in the Premier League, but he's very young still. And he did have 5 assists and 10 clean sheets last season. I think one of the big questions, really, and so it's, you have Chilwell and then you have Pereira. Pereira had 2 goals and 8 assists last season. So a pretty significant increase in both. Obviously, 0 to 2 is massive. But then even just 8.
It's a 200% increase, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. And then even from 5 assists to 8 is a pretty big jump as well. So so I think, one question is, Pereira versus Chilwell. I think at some point I will likely have one of these two players in my team and I'll have to decide whether I think Pereira is worth the extra 0.5 million. And I think it's really going to be tricky. Even though we had this massive difference in terms of attacking returns, the overall points between them was fairly close. Chilwell finished on 118 points, Pereira finished on 146. Right. So it's a 28 point difference. It's not that significant. A little bit of that was because Pereira was moving in and out of the squad a little bit. He was for a while there, he was sort of positioned as like a he was sort of playing as like a wing back. Right. Or maybe even like a little further up. Right? He was just playing as like an out of position midfielder. So he was getting subbed off in the 55th minute at times and stuff like that. Kind of like the risk you always run, when you draft in one of these like out of position players, like, are they going to treat it like somebody who's only going to get, is only going to last 55 minutes or whatever, unlike a defender, typically will last 90. So, I don't know.
I think Chilwell's time is really nigh. He's been tapped by the England senior squad, and I think people are seeing what he's. I like the comparison to Robertson for all the reasons that you explain. And he is also trusted with dead balls. His cross is sensational. Yeah, if he could add goals to his game, then he's by far for me the better player over Pereira. So I'd say just going into game week one, I feel like it's worth the savings of 0.5 to get Chilwell over Pereira if you're eyeing up Leicester for their defense. But to start the season, the fixtures are kind of a mixed bag and we have so much competition for defensive spots. I feel like Chilwell and Pereira will come into the discussion probably around the time of our first wild card.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the new signings, two in particular, I guess. There's Yuri Tielemans, who is not a new signing. I mean, he was a on loan player who just became a signing this week. You look at his numbers from last season, across, for Monaco and the Premier League, it's 8 goals, 6 assists, 11 yellow cards, which seemed a little high, in 43 appearances last year.
They do it differently in France, Josh, I guess.
Yeah, apparently. And so not overwhelming, but to watch Tielemans with your eyes, I think, is to see a player who is like surely going to be a great fantasy asset at some point, right? He just seems like he knows what he's doing with the ball. What was that? Remember that, like, the goal he scored? One of the game week 30s last season, where it was just like the ball fell to him outside of the box and he was like, all right, here we go, and just like looped it in. He's just very talented.
He has this way
player.
Of playing that he exudes this confidence and also this continental type of joie. I don't know, mixing all sorts of cliches here, but the joie de vivre that you just want to be a part of Team Tielemans. You feel like it's going places. I totally agree. The fact that Leicester was able to lock in this deal means they know exactly what they want to happen this season. Based on our Everton conversation, you've got to be feeling Leicester being the more ambitious of the two clubs at this point.
Yeah, and I think it does create like a kind of tricky situation. Well, let's talk a little bit before we get into the midfield. Let's talk a little bit about Jose Perez as well. So Perez is really interesting because he actually got reclassified as a midfielder going into the season, which was kind of weird, and I don't really get it because I guess I didn't watch enough Newcastle matches to have a completely fair assessment of this, but I thought he was a forward as well, and so him getting classified was very odd.
It was a strike partnership between him and Rondon. I mean, he would play off of Rondon, and Rondon would be the farthest forward. But that's how strike partnerships work.
Like Okazaki was always a forward. Yeah, this is a strange one. So, but last season, 12 goals, 2 assists, came on a little late, much like he did the season before. You know, I never really know what to make of this kind of stuff. I mean, I was talking about how Richarlison starts the season hot and how that makes me inclined to have him. And I also want to have Harry Kane in my team, even though he starts the season's cold. And I'm like, do I put any credence into this stuff? Are the sample sizes always so small that you really can't read anything into hot starts and cold starts? Yeah. I don't really know. I mean, at some point you just have to kind of trust your instincts or something.
What about
your
fever dream, Josh? That didn't clarify this issue at all.
I'm going to go talk to the shaman again and I'll come back. Okay. Give you some more information.
Where's the naked Indian when you need him?
All right, so you got Tielemans to join this week. We're still waiting on a price for him. You've got Jose Perez, who comes in at $6.5 million. And suddenly, you've got a situation where there are just a ton of interesting midfielders on Leicester, and it's not completely clear which is the one you really want. I mean, I think the Madison kind of stands out, you know, just because he's given – I mean, you know, just – given the chances that he's creating, right, which you've sort of been hammering home in this podcast, you know, to get a player like that at $7 million, it just feels like a good deal, you know, like it just feels like a value buy. And it's a player you just buy and you just hold on to because you know that through good fixtures and bad, he's going to find a way to get his points, you know. He's going to score his goals, he's going to get an assist. And, you know, could be that and he's also going to be playing, you know, as the number 10. He's going to be, you know, centrally involved in everything, you know, maybe Christian Eriksen style, you know.
Did you see James Madison's Instagram post with his Puma shoes where he was sitting on top of a Lamborghini wearing the most outrageous, like, patterned silk outfit you've ever seen? And the caption just says, "The hype is real." Like, James Madison is going full hype beast into this season.
Wow.
And I am here for it. I'm thirsty for Madison.
I guess that works, right? I mean, that's what the U.S. women just did, and that worked out. So, sure. Okay, great. So you've got Jose Perez at $6.5 million. You got James Madison at $7 million. You have Tielemans at whatever he comes in at. Do we want to talk about anyone else here? Not really. You know, Damari Gray, like, been there, advocated for him.
Sure.
Never happened. Mark Albrighton. Yeah. I've said too much about Mark Albrighton in an earlier podcast, so we'll just let that one go. Here's one. Okay, here's the one that I do want to mention. Poor Harvey Barnes. Remember when this guy was like the hottest thing in fantasy? There was a moment in like February 2019 where everybody was like selling Aguero to fund a Harvey Barnes move, you know?
And then Tielemans swoops in and steals Harvey Barnes' lunch. It's really rude.
Kind of did. So Harvey Barnes at $6 million, if he can earn a starting spot, is a really interesting player. He's huge. You know, I was talking last week about what's his name? The player on Burnley, McNeil, you know, who is just like this hulking player, you know, and Harvey Barnes is the same. Harvey Barnes is massive, you know, like he just looks like someone who will be able to play in the Premier League and, like, you know, muscles weigh in, score goals. I could mean that means a lot of yellow cards as well. I'm not really sure. You know, he didn't have any last year though, Brandon. So, you know. Good on you, Harvey. No yellow cards yet.
Come on, Harvey.
So, but I think he's a player to at least keep an eye out for. I don't think you can trust having him in your starting 11, you know, going into the season. I don't really read a lot into who starts in the preseason matches, by the way. I know that we're recording these before the, you know, some preseason matches have started, but most of them are just going to start kicking off, you know, this week and next week. But, you know, I used to do this game where I would try to track who was starting and, you know, if they started 4 to 5 matches, they're going to start the season. I just don't buy it anymore. I don't believe it. You know, it's just some players are ready and some players need to start a bunch, and other players like a Harry Kane type can just go and just slot right in game week one and they're ready to play, you know? So, so I wouldn't, so even if Harry Barnes starts a bunch of preseason matches, I still wouldn't necessarily trust him to start going into the season.
They're just trying to fill Harvey Barnes's, like, computer you know, profile with data so that they can sell him in January or something like that. I will be all in on this Leicester team if they manage to hang on to Harry Maguire. And you note here that, you know, the rumors are pretty strong that Maguire might go to Manchester United or City or who knows where else. Maguire is so good in that Leicester back line and like filling out like with, you know, playing right in front of Schmeichel, great GK, and the fullbacks who you talked about. I love this team if Maguire stays, and I think it's just like a complete team. So that's my big point of interest in the offseason right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that, I was looking to this team and I was like, man, I, you know, they could be a little young, you know, but I think that they are Champions League spot good potentially this season. They might need one more year, but it does feel like, yeah, it feels like that center back problem is the one problem that might exist. But, you know, but I'm not really sure. I mean, I suppose if they sell Maguire, in theory, they have money. But I mean, center backs can be pretty pricey sometimes too, like a high quality center back. So I don't know. They have this guy Sonyoku. Remember him? He came in like the start of last season. Really young though, so I don't know. But he's an interesting value option, possibly at 4.5 million. If you know, if they don't buy anybody once they, you know, if they do end up selling Maguire. So yeah, that's like a wait and see kind of thing there. But so do you have Madison in your squad right now? Do you have anyone from Leicester in your squad?
I don't. I actually had Madison in my first, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 different drafts. As I said, I've got the thirst for the hype. But I've been scared off by, well, it was kind of a, it wasn't that I've been wholly scared off by the fixtures, but wooed by the Everton fixtures. This discussion that we're having is pretty helpful, I think, in that maybe my fear of Leicester's fixtures is getting tempered a bit by the value that we see here. And if I drop Sigurdsson for Madison, that's a 1 million. That's a big deal for your game week one draft. I think I'm definitely leaning toward that per this conversation.
Yeah. And I guess I'm leaning towards us moving on because we just spent 30 minutes on Everton and Leicester somehow. I mean, go ahead.
Just one last thought. The monkey wrench will be if FPL is as smart as I think they are, they'll price Tielemans at 6.5, and then that will cause us all to really reconsider.
Put him right in that middle spot, exactly. And I think Vardy is an interesting option too, just not off the bat. Just the way I'm constructing my team, it'd be maybe if I just decided I just can't fit Harry Kane in, then maybe Vardy goes in that slot instead. But even then, I feel like I'd rather just have Madison. I just think Vardy is cheaper than I was expecting him to be. But I think Madison is the best value in this lot.
Yeah. All right, Josh, we have our work cut out for us with these next three teams, Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United. Let's do Liverpool, then we'll take a quick break. But you asked if Leicester were Champions League good. Liverpool are Champions League champions. So that was a good segue, wasn't it? It was pretty seamless.
Yeah, so they're good.
Yeah, so Liverpool are good. They have lots of good players. They have one of the tastiest opening fixtures in game week one, home Norwich. We have longtime FPL managers have had great fortune with this Liverpool-Norwich matchup. Luis Suarez was incapable of scoring any fewer than 10 goals against poor Buddy in goal.
And yep.
It's a pretty decent run from there. Southampton, then home Arsenal, Burnley, Newcastle, then Chelsea in game week six. So the main question is, okay, the main answer is we want three Liverpool players. The main question is, how do we arrange those three players? Do you go three Liverpool defenders? Do you go two Liverpool defenders and one midfielder? So on and so forth. Alisson, 6 million. He and Ederson are the most expensive GKs in the game. Alisson had Ederson beat with 21 clean sheets. Is it even worth talking about Alisson, Josh, considering all the work we have cut out for us with the defenders?
No, we can move on. I think he would be your third Liverpool player, you know? Like if you were doing some kind of slotting system and you were trying to make sure, you know, I mean, this is the time to do it, right? This is, you know, You're on a month long wild card before the season starts. You know, there's no reason to have to have Allison right now. So it's like, you know, bring in the two Liverpool players that you most want, you know, for your drafts, you know, bring in, you know, whoever that may be, Salah and Van Dijk or whomever, Robertson. And then if he can't fit Trent, maybe Allison, you know, but it's like, I don't love him at, at 6 million either. I don't know why I'm like, I'm really in my head. I'm just stuck on Ederson at that 6 million bracket. I just think he's kind of ideal, maybe because I don't really trust who's going to start in that Man City defense. And so it feels like that kind of just solves a problem for me, you know, which is like, I want into that Man City clean sheet.
I will tell you why I think Ederson is appealing, because Allison, he would only be appealing for Liverpool defensive coverage because of his security of starts. If we believe in the myth of rotation and what is that going to do with Rabo and Trent on the wings. But Allison offers you nothing beyond clean sheets, whereas, and that is good enough in some cases, like with a player like De Gea, a premium goalkeeper. But if you're looking at Liverpool's defenders, their attacking output is just, it's the next level. Robertson and Virgil van Dijk were the two the first two defenders last season to ever break 200 points in a season. So you've got three defenders that we have to talk about. It's Trent, Virgil van Dijk, and Rabo. Rabo and Trent, the fullbacks priced at 7 million. VVD is the bargain at 6.5. Right now I have VVD, Rabo, and Trent, all three of them in my current draft.
Wow.
I'm just dodging the Liverpool midfield altogether at my own peril, I'm assuming. But I think there is merit to all three of these guys.
Sure.
So just looking at the numbers, the thing that your initial thought is Robertson is the number one defender to have because he was secure in his starts, great with bonus, and a tremendous assist potential. But what I found interesting was just looking at the cross stats. So I dipped into the Premier League's cross stats to look at Lucas Digne, who was number one in the league. Sixth overall in crosses in the league last season was Trent Alexander-Arnold with 201. Robertson, you have to go all the way down to 21st on that list of crosses to get to Robertson with 135. So that's almost 70 fewer crosses Robertson had than Trent, which is fascinating. Trent had 27 starts compared to Robertson's 36.
Yeah.
So I guess the case I'm trying to build for you here, Josh, is Trent is growing into his stature and into his career and his performance in the Champions League. I mean, who will ever forget that performance against Barcelona at Anfield? He at the end of that season, Trent was the best right back playing in the Premier League, if not the world. And he is young, and I think he's poised this season to easily outshine Robertson. So that would be the case that I'd make to pick Trent over Rabo, because I think this idea that Trent is young and needs to be sort of bedded into the squad and can be rotated from time to time, I think he's good. He's been blooded. He's ready to go. Now Robertson, he's just this old Scottish bloke who probably needs a rest.
he's going to be, 25 next year?
I don't know. I mean, they're both obviously fantastic, and why not have both? And that's why I have all three of all them plus Virgil van Dijk at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know about having all three. That feels like – it doesn't feel fun to me. I feel like – I feel like if I just had all three, I mean, I'm planning to have two, so I guess it's not that different. But I feel like if I had three defenders from the same team, if anything, if they lost a clean sheet in the third minute, I'd be like, all right, well, I mean, I guess they can score and assist and that, you know, so that's why it's one of the reasons why you do it. But I don't know. It feels like I don't know. It doesn't feel right.
Feels like cheating. Is that like native advertising for always cheating?
No. Now I'm sounding like those people who said don't Captain Duffy last season. You know, where they're like, oh, it's like that's not the way I play, so it's wrong. You know, it's just like I just doesn't feel like the way I want to do it. You know, I don't know. That's my a weirdly conservative stance on that. I don't know where that came from. It's like I turned into my father all of a sudden. Yeah.
I do think there's something there to what you're saying, Josh, because there will not, we will not know exactly what the right answer is with this conundrum. It's three sensationally great FPL picks in these defenders, and yeah, who you go for, I think, can definitely just be by gut feel. I think they'll all work out in their own way. So don't stress too much about it. What I would stress is, beyond Robertson, Trent, and VVD, there are no other options. Like, to try and get smart with Matip or Gomez,
don't play that game.
In your face.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, so so that's the defense boxed. The midfield is perhaps a larger thing that we need to unpack, because there's a huge
decision. Other reason not to triple up, of course, you know, in the defense,
Don't triple up on the Liverpool defense so you can have at least one of the best midfielders in all of FPL. So, and that could be one of two. It could be Salah or Mane. So Salah came down in price this season from 13 to 12.5. That could present value, or some would probably argue that he's now appropriately priced. And then Mane goes way up. From, was he 9.5 last season? And now he's 11.5. So last season, they both ended on 22 goals. But Salah finished heads and tails above Mane in terms of assists, 12 assists to 3. And we do know Salah is terrible on bonus, so we won't talk about that. In the end, there were 28 points that separated Salah and Mane, Salah coming up on top. If you do a stats comparison tool, just the naked numbers with Salah and Mane throughout the course of the entire season, looking at XG, XA, and removing penalties from all of those equations, Salah still batters Mane on the stats. Salah remains the stats pick. So Salah generally passes the eye test. He passes the stats test. It's always just, I mean, all of last season was just a, is he worth 13 million argument that we were having all season.
Yeah, he's just a better player, right? I mean, you know, like, he's just like Mane, you know, fantasy aside, you know, I mean, Mane is a more one-dimensional player for sure. So I guess the question is, is that extra 28 points, assuming that's what we're going to see again this year, worth the extra million, you know?
Hard to say. And I think what you have to bring into the conversation now is captaincy. And while I would comfortably captain Mane on any given day, you'd feel much more confident captaining Salah, just looking at his history of double figure returns and consistent returns.
Right.
So if you're looking for a reason to upgrade to 12.5 for Salah, I think the confidence to give Salah the armband should get you there. And I think Salah is just the pick. Mane is a great pick, but unfortunately he is competing against probably the better to best pick in the game.
He's also not very good on the road. You know, just he's fantastic at Anfield. He's not great on the road. That's kind of been the consistent knock against him, or one of the consistent knocks against him. And like you said, I think the captaincy, I mean, that's actually a really compelling argument, because I would not feel comfortable captaining Mane on the road, and virtually, assuming they weren't playing like a promoted side or something like that, right? But even like, they play Burnley away in game week 4. Like, I don't really want to captain. I'd almost rather captain like a Trent for a match, like, you know, than I would Sadio Mane, you know, because I just don't necessarily think that Mane would be the best captain option that week. He might not show up like he hasn't in so many road matches. So So I think that is compelling. I'm still really on the fence about the two. It just depends on, I don't know, you know, I'm just like, I'm really hooked right now on this idea of having Kane in my squad. And I wonder if it's making me sacrifice in too many other spots. And then ultimately Kane's just going to have to go, you know, to fund these, like, you know, Mane to Salah moves and stuff like that. So, all right. So let's agree Mane it is. Let's agree a triple up is one way to go. And then anything about Firmino?
Yeah, I mean, Firmino, fun player. You love to watch him, but 160 points total last season, it's just not enough. He was more than 60 points short of both Mane and Salah. So maybe one day down the road, our paths will cross again, Bobby, but not for game week one.
Yeah, I agree. And any signings, any signing news? Like, it feels like there's been some rumors, but nothing big has happened, right? Like,
no, it's nothing kind of, nothing yeah. big has happened. Certainly, I feed off of this idea that Mbappe could come to Liverpool, and I think my heart would explode if just from an FPL perspective.
Sure,
if that were to happen, I just don't know how realistic it is. Yep. It was just kind of like it's nothing too much is in need of fixing at that club right now. The one overthinking manager point to touch on is Mane with Senegal. He could play into the African Cup of Nations final that's July 19th, which would leave him, you know, less than 3 weeks to recover, or wow. right around 3 weeks to recover for the first week of the season.
Yeah, well, this is interesting. This is I'm really you're really I like the way that we're like we're pulling each other right now. You know, like we're actually listening to each other and we're convincing each other, which is
That's a rare thing.
It is a rare thing. Only early on in the season does this still happen. So
yeah.
All right, you're making some good points. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we've got three more teams to go.
Super. Josh, let's take a minute to talk about our good friends at Fantasy Football Hub. It's your one-stop shop for all FPL needs, articles, videos, hands-on tools, podcasts, just like us. Josh, what is it that you love about Fantasy Football Hub?
Brandon, what I love about Fantasy Football Hub, and I mean this sincerely despite the announcer voice that I decided to just use there a second ago, is that I don't actually believe that I know everything there is to know about fantasy. And I love listening to people who are very smart, who take the game seriously, who are willing to spend the time to create a YouTube video, to write an article, to
make a spreadsheet
yeah, exactly, and explain the game to all of us. And it's all collected on this one space, and it's very convenient, and it's very easy to use, and it's the actual site itself is very nice. I like the experience of being on there. It feels very warm and welcoming.
Yeah, all credit to Will Thomas for the site design, who started the site and is a great fantasy manager in his own right, also featuring voices from Matthew Jones, Adam Hopcraft, and Ben Krellen. If you become a member at Fantasy Football Hub, it's at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk, you gain access to tons of great members-only features, which includes a new Opta data tool. That's Opta. That's straight data juice from the source. Advanced fixture tickers, and an RMT and comparison tool. You get video and text guides, including the Hub's How to Win at FPL guide and the Ultimate Preseason guide, Ben Krellen's exclusive FPL planning sheet, over 100 membership articles a year, including a weekly team reveal from top-ranked FPL managers. And here is the big-ticket item, Josh. Every member of Fantasy Football Hub gets entered into a league that has a £5,000 cash prize. That's really epic. So if you want to join, become a member today for 10% off, visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always and use the code always at checkout to get that 10% off your membership. Again, the website is fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always.
All right, Brandon, as I just said to you as we came back from the break, are you ready for the big one? Here we are, Manchester City. This what you do with Manchester City, which is true of so many fantasy seasons, I guess it's like Liverpool. They're like binary stars, you know? It's like what you do with those two teams. You can have fun with the Leicesters and the Evertons at the edges, but you know, how you play Man City and how you play Liverpool are gonna determine what your finish is this season. And it's hard not to spend a lot of time talking about them because there's just a lot to think about and a lot of
terrifying. You're making me sweat right now, Josh.
Well, there's a lot of gambling involved, I think, too. And I think that, you know, I think that we're talking about a lot of stuff. I don't know that we're necessarily advocating strongly for anything, because I do think that you're going to have to just take a, you know, I mean, I think that we're, you know, like for example, with Mane and Salah, I think you made a pretty good compelling pace, but in some cases, it is very tricky. You know, you talk about someone like Kevin De Bruyne, you know, full on injury riddled season last year. You know, I mean, a terrible year. Year before that, he, you know, was the assist leader in the Premier League, you know, and so which player are you getting? And if you get that player again, then he's fantastic value at 9.5 million, you know, and so of course it's a gamble, you know, and so, so, okay, so here we are. We've got everyone's back. You know, all the great players are back,
the gang's all here,
and they're all more expensive than ever. So you have Sergio Aguero is 12 million. Raheem Sterling is 12 million. Bruno Silva came in cheaper than we predicted. We both thought he'd come in at 8.5. He came in at 8. De Bruyne came in at 9.5. Laporte at 6.5. Ederson 6. So most of the prices were kind of in the range that we expected. I don't think we need to go too much into any of the numbers from last season for any of these players. Everybody knows who these guys are already. I do have two things I want to talk about. One are new players and one are some key questions. So just to get the new players out of the way, because they're not necessarily fantasy assets, but I think they are both interesting. You have Rodri, who's the defensive midfielder from Atletico Madrid. He's available for 5.5 million in the game. Full on Fernandinho replacement. Right. He's a you know, complete non-starter as a fantasy asset, but, you know, hugely rated talent. He's only going to make that defense better. And, you know, but, you know, only 3 goals and 1 assist in 47 appearances last year. And I thought the 47 appearances really like that stuck out to me because that's an incredible amount of
is he playing the championship?
No, he was. I mean, he was playing in Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid, which
they play a lot of games, Champions League, and cup play, all that.
Yeah, it also requires like a level of defensive stamina that must be huge, right? And so for him to earn 47 appearances last year, you know, he must be a fantastic player. I'm not going to pretend that I have like a solid read on. I just don't watch enough Atletico Madrid or their defensive midfield anyway to have a strong strong opinion.
I'll add you to my Rodri push notification.
Please do. But you know, I think what's important here is that he will make that back four and Ederson better and more valuable as fantasy assets. The other player who I think is really interesting is Angelino, who's a left back who joined from PSV this summer. Is over 5 million. Now, he is actually a former City Academy player who was so good last season that Man City activated their buyback clause on him. He had 1 goal, 12 assists, and 6 yellow cards and 43 appearances for PSV. Although, actually, 6 yellow cards and 43 appearances, that's not bad. I feel like that's like, you know, it's impressive.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Sure.
It's that one, one every whatever that is, 8 matches. That's not too bad.
Do you hear that funeral dirge playing in the background? Is that the sound of Benjamin Mendy leaving our thoughts altogether?
This is the problem. So you have the left back situation now is a complete mess. You've got Zinchenko, who played great down the stretch last year. You have Ben Mendy, who has looks like the coolest guy in the world when he's healthy and playing and simply can't stay healthy. You know, I mean, first of all, Mendy might just be the cool, like he loves life and he's happy. And it's like a, you know, freaking tragedy. This guy has had so many injuries, you know, I mean, it's six assists and like no matches last year. You know,
it's a tragedy. Yeah. It's a tragedy less that we haven't gotten to see him play as much football as we could have. It's just a tragedy that I think his profile and his Instagram could be even bigger if he played.
That's
more.
True. Yeah, it's a Q rating tragedy more than anything. so you've got Mendy. He's 6 million. Zinchenko's 5.5. Angelino's 5. Presumably they'll all rotate a little bit. Maybe Mendy does ultimately leave. I think he probably gets one more year to stay. I mean, Man City can certainly like deal with a huge amount of squad depth, you know, and they rotates a lot, but it does, you know, kind of looking throughout this whole defense, it's, you know, all this talk about, you know, who the center back is going to be, that they're going to pair with Laporte, you know, consistency. There's this talk that Otamendi may be on the way out. John Stones.
No one respects Otamendi at this point. It's kind of crazy.
But 2 years ago, he was awesome. Remember that? Like, am I mistaken? Yeah. Was he not like an awesome player 2 years ago? Or am I totally
off base here? It happens to the best of us, Josh. It will happen to you and me. One season, people will just log off of Always Cheating, and that will be the end of it.
Oh, God. That's a depressing thought. So it's like 2092. All right. So, you've got Otamendi maybe on the way out. Stones hasn't earned a spot. A lot of talk of someone else maybe coming in. Maybe that's Ake. Maybe that's who knows. So it's a worry. And then Laporte is $6.5 million, which is a little expensive. I don't know. I mean, it's expensive for a center back. Van Dijk is so lethal, in the box, and he's even like started picking up some assists late in the season, that his 6.5 doesn't bother me quite as much. I also think I just trust that Liverpool defense a little bit more. And I also trust that that Van Dijk just has an immortal lock on a starting spot in that team, nothing will stop him from starting a match. Yeah. Whereas Laporte is always a little bit of injury risk. I mean, he did start 34 of 38 matches last year, and three that he missed through injury. So, he's about as rock solid a defensive asset as you can get. He also did play really well down the stretch. But in the end, three goals and three assists. He did have 18 clean sheets on the season. Just three yellow cards, pretty impressive as well.
That's good.
16 bonus points. But I think it's Ederson for me. He's the one that that I want. He's the one that I plan to start the season with. My team name, Brandon, this year is Ederson 38, because I'm going Ederson all 38 game weeks.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. That's not my team name, but that'd be funny if it was. I think I'm going to go. My goal is to go Ederson at least until I need money later on. And then I will convince myself into a 4.5 million, keeper rotation or something.
So you're buying into an Ederson hedge fund or something like that. And then you will cash it in at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to try to buy. Okay, so you're buying a little high at $6 million, but you're not buying insanely high.
Yeah.
Just annoying, but it's not insane.
I agree. When you compare Ederson to Laporte, and talking about Laporte in comparison to Virgil van Dijk, you can't help but logically end up at Ederson as your starting goalkeeper, assuming you can afford it. So I'm right with you there.
All right, yeah.
So should we move on to attacking assets here?
Yeah, let's do it. So, okay, here's the big question, I think, especially because it would just solve a lot of problems. Can Bernardo keep improving? Right. So Bernardo Silva last season, 7 goals, 8 assists. I was up from 6 goals and 5 assists the season before. He kind of feels like he is the bright young star on the team, right? Maybe we thought that was going to be Leroy Sané, and now it looks like Sané is going to leave for Bayern Munich or something in the offseason. I mean, I don't even really know. It's been rumored for a while, and I just wonder if he's going to quietly shuffle off at some point. Because he just one day we'll know what happened there, right? Like why he Pep lost all trust in Sané.
The Manchester City beat reporter will let us know the second that Sané leaves Manchester City. Then we'll know.
Yeah, then we'll know. Yeah. So I think so what do you think? I mean, Bernardo Silva, just underlying stats aside, what's your just feeling about him as a player?
My feeling is he's a great player. He will, if he improves, I think he'll keep improving just in terms of in the context of Manchester City. For FPL, I think it's only a marginal improvement that I see happening. I'm not interested in Bernardo Silva. For me, it's the more high caliber players of Kevin De Bruyne and Sterling. And if we're not talking about them, I feel like Bernardo Silva, good as he is strictly a compromise. And if we're looking at the two top teams in the league with Liverpool and Manchester City, I'm really not interested in compromising on these players. And that's what I feel from Bernardo Silva. He could prove me wrong. And if he proves me wrong, then great. Then we have a terrific asset to buy into. But my immediate feeling is no.
Is De Bruyne not compromised too, though? I mean, we don't really know what we're going to get out of him this year, you know, and there's already been some talk about Pep saying that we just can't play him as much as we used to. We need to make sure he gets rested more often. And so, you know, it's a big risk, you know, $9.5 million on a midfielder when you're not exactly sure, you know, how rock solid they are on that team.
So, you know, I'm just as unsure about that Kevin De Bruyne question as I am about your Bernardo Silva question. But what I do know is when Kevin De Bruyne was fit last season, he had patches where he looked exceptional. He looked like his two seasons ago version of himself. So that opens up the door of hope that we could get full KDB back this season. And that's the okay. So they're both risks, right? Silva, I don't think his ceiling is as high as KDB's, so it's a risk there. KDB, I'm not sure if he's as healthy or as playable as I think he is. But for me, that if we're talking about one of those two risks, the KDB one feels better and feels like there's more upside.
Yeah, I kind of want both. The part of me feels like it'd be fun to have KDB and Bernardo, but then I just wonder if I'm in a position where why would I have KDB and Bernardo when I could just have Raheem Sterling and a 5 million player or like whatever that math works out, you know?
I'm set up right now is that's my move in moving away from the Liverpool midfield is I've got three Liverpool defenders and then it's KDB plus Sterling in the midfield.
Okay. Gotcha. Interesting. Okay. So, yeah, I think, you know, so obviously we can talk about Sterling and Aguero now, the two chief fantasy assets. I mean, it's just tricky. You know, they're both $12 million. It's a huge outlay. You know, I think Sterling is probably the slightly more stable option in that team. Right. He's got a spot locked down. I mean, Aguero does, too, obviously. But Jesus has been, you know, he had a good, you know, Copa America. Eventually he surely will get a shot, right? To be kind of a more consistent starter in this team, or will he always be the backup? Will he be okay with that, you know, as a just, you know, backup at Man City the rest of his career or until Aguero moves on to Qatar or something in 3 years, you know? It's like, I don't know what, I don't know. You know, I'm not, and like Pep's job is not to make his players feel good about their careers or whatever. You know, I mean, he's got to make sure that they win as many matches as possible. But I do wonder if maybe Aguero does get a little more rested this year. I mean, I was surprised by just how many times he started last year and just how prominent he was in that team. You know, I did think that he would be rotated a little more often. And so, but is there any realistic reason to think that that's going to happen this year?
I think that there is, I think I think there is a way of thinking with FPL or just sports and athletes in general, that the next season starts where the last season left off. Time passes. Granted, it's like 2 months, but time does pass. Aguero is, you know, we've noted for a season plus that he's on the downward trajectory. He had a phenomenal season last season, and I agree it was kind of shocking that he was as talismanic as he was for City. But, I mean, we continue on this course toward Aguero being phased out, and if anyone's going to come in and take some minutes away from him, it's Jesus. And yeah, it's a real fear for me. And I think Sterling, compared to Aguero, even though Aguero scored so many goals and did so well, Sterling walked away from that league-winning season as the figurehead, the new figurehead of that Manchester City squad. And you know, it's Sterling's team now, right? I think Sterling is the player to have if we're talking about the two.
Yeah, I think so too. But I do get an argument. I mean, like for all the talk of Aguero played 500 minutes more last season than did the season before. You know, it's a shocking jump, you know, at his age. And so, I don't know. And he did get knocked out of the Copa America a little earlier than Jesus and Brazil did, if that makes any kind of difference, you know.
Well, we're talking about Richarlison again, right? And if you Richarlison getting that confidence boosting penalty that he scores at the end of the final for the Copa America.
Right.
Jesus hadn't scored a tournament goal for Brazil until that final, if you don't count the PK that he took against Paraguay, I think it was. Right. It's the same level of confidence. And I think Jesus only stands to benefit from what happened in Copa America. And Aguero, it's kind of the opposite. Like, his bleached tips are looking worse than ever. Argentina's looking worse than ever. And I think one of the reasons you could theorize anyway that Aguero played those extra 500 minutes is because Jesus was just frankly out of form and Pep couldn't play him for whatever form he was in. And that's something that can really change in a short period of time.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's easy to have both. I'll say that much. Aguero and Sterling, I would love to have both. Seems like you're going to have to pick one. I think I'm with you on Sterling. I mean, you just look at those annual returns the last two seasons, you know, 18 goals, 17 assists in 17-18 in the 17-18 season. 17 goals and 15 assists last year, you know, played last year about 300 more minutes than Aguero, you know, just really consistent player, had the whole summer off. I think you got to go with Sterling. Brandon, one final question about Man City. Is there any good value anywhere in this team? Do you see any real value anywhere?
Yeah, remains to be seen about a guy like Riyad Mahrez, priced at 8.5. Will he play? I expect we'll see the same Mahrez that we saw last season. Therefore, it's a non-starter for me. The real value is either Ederson as a 6 million way into a lot of City points. I agree. I think the clean sheets are going to be bigger and badder than ever at City. And then Bernardo Silva, that's the big attacking value pick if he actually steps it up. But yeah, as I said, I kind of remain doubtful.
All right, let's move on. Manchester United. That was real, Brandon. That was like I knew it was going to be a slugfest, and it was.
Are we the same men coming out of that Manchester City conversation?
I think my cold sweats are back. So no,
All right. Well, your cold sweats aren't going to get any better because we're going to talk about one of the weirdest teams in the Premier League right now, Manchester United, who have the Europa League kiss of death, though generally a deep squad, so they won't be impacted by the Europa League like a team like Burnley. But the opening fixture, Chelsea at Old Trafford, that will be a fascinating match to watch. Frank Lampard's Chelsea coming to Old Trafford. And then it's Wolves, Palace, Southampton, Leicester, West Ham. Not a terrible run. The problem with Manchester United, though, is they're priced like Manchester United players historically. But this is a team that we just really don't want anything to do with. I mean, starting with the defense, no one priced below 5.5 this side of Darlow or Darlot. I don't know how you pronounce that, but I don't care. We're not going to put him in our FPL teams.
Darlow.
Darlow. I knew I'd get corrected either way. Even if Harry Maguire comes to Manchester United at 5.5, the price still doesn't feel right for a team like this. And again, I go back to the chestnut of there is so much competition for defensive spots in FPL and so many great options. Right. That we're staying away from these guys.
And Brandon, just as like a big picture thing too, I mean, I think the elephant in the room with this team is their manager, right? I mean, it's a team that clearly stopped responding to the manager that they just gave a massive contract extension to, on kind of like a spur of the moment, you know, European flush of excitement. And then they proceeded to kind of get their asses kicked the rest of the season. And, yeah, you know, it's hard to shake that memory, and it's hard to feel like,
yeah,
you know, a full off season is going to suddenly turn the, it makes you wonder about, I don't know. I'm always like a little wary of, I know Manchester United have a lot of fans, and I, you know, I have a lot of respect for the club, but like it's, I wonder about some of these players, you know, it just like it for them to quit so comprehensively down the stretch. It just, what was going on there? You know, like who are the culprits? Like it can't just be Paul Pogba. Like I don't buy that crap. You know, it's like,
yeah.
So what was going on there? Like, how did you look so horrible down the stretch? You know, like what are you unmotivated? Is it that you don't feel like you fit into the team? Is it that, you know, and so you see all this and then you see this team that looks like it might be pretty much the same possible, like, you know, with the possible addition of the addition by subtraction, perhaps, of Pogba in some ways, even though he's obviously a great player and they will be worse if he leaves. So I don't know.
Well, like, here's what happened. Here's the issue. The issue with Manchester United is they're a club. They're a huge club with huge ambition, but they are in a really bad spot historically right now. So you're bringing in ambitious players into a club that is, underachieving isn't quite the right word, but they're just not set up to compete right now. Right. And yeah, you can blame Paul Pogba, one of the best midfielders in the world, for not stepping up to that challenge. But yeah, if you look at Ole in the management position, but that's just a strange signal to send to your players, if not the world. Like who is this guy beyond his history with the club?
Right.
I mean, who is he as a manager, I think, is the better question. So I think there's a lot of this mentality writ large throughout the club. I don't think it's down to just like a weird personal war being waged.
Yeah, I guess I'd like just like maybe this will finally put a stop to the like sign this man like this, like that talk that was going on for months. This happens like every time that a manager gets sacked and somebody steps in and wins like three games in a row, and suddenly like everyone is like screaming to like remove the interim label and sign them. It's like, where are these guys going to go? You know, like what are you worried they're going to get poached? Like, you're Man United. He's the coach there. Like, if they decide, you know, they decide to wait until June, he's going to wait too. Like, where's he going to go? You know,
he's going to go back to the Norwegian league.
Yeah, he's going to quit in April or something, you know, because of how unjust it is. Like, just wait till the season's done at the very least. Like, it's so deflating, it seems like, when these coaches sign permanent deals in the middle of the season.
Yeah. So, yeah, the weird team, really tough FPL situation there. I mean, a beloved FPL asset and Aaron Wan-Bissaka priced 5.5 priced out of the game for me, no matter where he's playing. The appeal of Aaron Wan-Bissaka was him at 4 million at Crystal Palace. I mean, he had an exceptional season and earned this move.
Yeah,
I mean, he earned
a wonderful player
to wherever he wanted to go.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, at 5.5, he's not offering us anything. And I shared my concerns with Maguire there. So the one player to highlight here in the midfield is the newbie from Swansea, Daniel James, priced enticingly at 6 million. Mm-hmm. Who is Daniel James? Took Manchester City to the final moments in the League Cup semifinal, FA Cup, can't remember. But in terms of his attacking production, it's not super exciting. 4 goals, 7 assists with Swansea. He's not like an all-action guy. His appeal is his incredible pace. And how does Daniel James change when he's surrounded by an experienced Premier League side as opposed to a Swansea side?
It's a little bit like David Brooks coming through Bournemouth last season, right? He was a pacey mm-hmm. Sheffield, you know, winger who was about to jump up in the league, and I think his numbers were okay at Sheffield, but they weren't fantastic. And then it was like, yeah, what are we getting from this guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, he predominantly plays on the left, which is a problem because you've got the likes of Martial and Alexis Sanchez, for whatever that's worth, who have the left side of the field on lockdown. But James, he's young. He can run wherever. He can also play on the right. The price is terrific, but we have no idea what he can do in the league or on this team. He just has to prove himself before I think either of us could coach anyone to put him into their FPL side.
Yeah, it'd be a little too punty, I think.
Yeah, the interesting stat that I saw was regarding Daniel James's key pass ability, his creativity, comparing his stats there to the likes of Martial and Lingard and Pogba. Daniel James is just way off the pace. So if you're looking at a pacey winger, the hope is that they would be feeding balls into the box. They'd have assist potential. And this is actually a problem for Daniel James.
Right. So young, though. You know, hard to say.
Yeah. So Daniel James, exciting price point just for FPL, but a wait and see. But all these other midfielders, Pogba will even be there. Martial, equally mercurial. Lingard, just 4 goals and 3 assists. Can you remember a single goal or an assist from Jesse Lingard last season?
No. I feel like maybe he did something in the Champions League. I can't remember anything in the Premier League itself, though. I'm sorry, Jesse.
Sorry, Jesse. Alexis at 7 million. That's like a, I don't know, that's like a nice going away gift for him. Alexis still looked like a husk of himself in the Copa America. So it's not like United, the club, was holding him back and he just needed to go play with his friends again and he'd look bright, but he did not.
Hey, if Alexis were 4.5 million, he'd be straight in as my fifth midfielder. But at 7 million, it's a little too high.
Lukaku probably on his way, then Rashford up price to 8.5 million. I mean, 10 goals, 7 assists, 14 bonus points.
Yeah. It's
still not convincing for me at that price tag. Far out rumors for Manchester United. In a big club, you'll get the big rumors, but the Gareth Bale one would actually be one that would raise my eyebrow. That would be fun. I mean, he would be far too expensive in FPL to justify bringing him in at this stage. Yeah. But
I don't even know what's going on with him in Real. It's like so theatrical, you know. It's like, why won't he leave? Like no one. It's like no one wants him there, and he won't leave. And it's like I don't understand does he just love the city that much? Just like I don't know. Are his kids in a great school? He doesn't want to pull him out. I don't know what's like. Why won't he leave? You know, like it's a bizarre thing. I don't know. It's like he's like a house guest who like you can't like
the
shoo
unwelcome
out, you
guest
know?
Gareth Bale.
Yeah, exactly. He's just drinking sherry in the corner and you're like, gotta go, man. I'm sorry.
And doing his man bun thing. Other hilarious transfer rumors I found at Transfer Market. John McGinn, who we talked about with Aston Villa coming up, rumored to be going to Old Trafford. Sean Longstaff at Newcastle. We're about to talk about Newcastle. I'm going to blow up your entire Newcastle preview by telling you heard it here first. Longstaff is coming to Manchester United. And then just like a slew of defensive transfer rumors, which does make sense because the defense is a bit of an issue there at the moment. Yeah. So there it is. Nobody to highly recommend here for United. And I don't think that surprises anyone listening.
No, it's sad to say. You know, you never know, you know, when Ole inevitably gets sacked, like in November, presumably things will turn around. But, you know, until then, it's like, who knows? You know, it's just, it's kind of even if we just remove all the real life stuff, just from a fantasy perspective, I don't know how you can trust any of these players in your starting team, the, you know, defense, midfield, forward line. You know, the fixtures aren't that good to start off anyway. So, just wait and see, you know, and maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe they're, you know, Jesse Lingard finally sort of reaches his full potential this year or something. But like, there's no reason to take a punt at any of these guys, you know, right out the bat.
Yep. Agreed. Okay, Josh, on to Newcastle.
All right.
What do you got to say?
Okay, so as I mentioned before, I'm going to keep this positive, all right? I didn't even pull numbers. There's no reason to, okay? First of all, like on the fantasy site right now, there's about 8 players listed under Newcastle, right? They barely have like a full 11 to like field a team. Wow.
They're the Fulham of this season. That's interesting.
It's a bad situation. Benitez is gone. It's, you know, Rondon is apparently now he's going to be going to China with Benitez. Like going to the same club that Benitez is going to. So, obviously they've already sold, Jose Perez to Leicester. And so they've lost their forwards.
What happened?
It's just like, it's bad.
Is this what the New York Knicks did last season? Are they're going for like the first round draft pick here?
I think this is what happens when an owner is very publicly trying to sell the team. You know, this actually happened with the Detroit Pistons like 10 years ago when Bill Davidson, who's a longtime owner of the Pistons, died. And his wife became sort of like the caretaker owner of the club. You know, he was in his 80s or something. And she was trying to sell the club for years. And so she wouldn't take on any assets because she didn't want to make the sale less palatable for new owners. And so they just had this husk of a team. And that's why the Pistons 10 years later are still bad, because they just like never built anything, you know. Yeah. And but they were always kind of mediocre enough to like they never hit rock bottom. And so they could never kind of push themselves up off of it, you know. So anyway, that's how it feels like that's what happened with Newcastle right now, is like they're just hanging on, you know, to the Premier League by the skin of their teeth. And I honestly don't know how this team could possibly stay up this year. You know, it's okay, but I said I was going to stay positive, so let's keep on the positive note.
It didn't last very long.
Yeah, did it? And I have to note, even though I'm trying to stay positive, that they do have a terrible run of fixtures to start the season as well.
Just get that one out of the way real quick, Jeff.
Yeah, I recommend don't pick up anyone until at least game week 10, maybe game week 12, just to be safe, okay? So the first 11 game weeks, so we're talking about the first, you know, we're talking about Christmas time, Brandon. And that's when you can finally start maybe thinking about a Newcastle player. Jamal Salas, mentioned him before. I like him. I'll stay on him. You know, I like DeAndre Yedlin too. You know, he's kind of fun. Got some fun American energy.
great neck tattoos. Good stuff.
My like little thing about Jamal Lascelles is not only do I think he's good value at $4.5 million, because he's surely going to start every single match, but I think he can actually score some more goals this season, partially because Rondon's head won't be around to score on set pieces. And I think that may open up some opportunities for Lascelles to score. So
it's a big head.
Yep. Matt Ritchie, I promise I wouldn't say anything bad, so I'm not going to say anything at all. Brandon, we're just going to move on. I think you and I both pledged that we will not have Matt Ritchie the entire 38 game weeks of the season. I mean, a 5.5 million Newcastle defender. I mean, come on.
Yeah, like, that's an always cheating promise.
Yeah. All right, let's see if we can end this on a more positive note. Miguel Almiron, very talented player, a little overpriced at $6 million, though, for such an unproven asset. And unfortunately, right now, it's a team without a lot of players going to help him score or assist. So it's a tricky situation. I mean, presumably they can use some of this Perez money to bring in some new players. I mean, there's so much money tied up in staying in the Premier League that they're going to have to try to spend some money to stay up. You know, it's just such a financial, you know, tailspin that you could go into.
Yeah.
If you
want to talk about the sellability of a club, it's much more enticing to buy into those Premier League broadcasting rights as opposed to the championship, where it's so difficult to get out of that mire.
I know. And it's so wild too, is it sounds like if Mike Ashley had just paid for Solomon Rondon, that would have been enough for Benitez to
stay. Suddenly we're talking about Newcastle being a really exciting team. If you've got, because Perez, Rondon and Almiron looked like one of the most exciting, fast, powerful triptychs up top in the whole league.
And even if Perez went, he'd be like, all right, well, at least, you know, Benitez, like, you trust that he's going to keep them up. You know, you've got some cheap defensive options. But as it is, there's just not, you know, we don't even know who the manager is going to be as of this recording. You know, it looks like Mikel Arteta is strongly rumored, you know, so that would be kind of interesting. He's been kind of kicking around a lot of the coaching vacancies the last couple of years.
That's a hard one to take as your first job when you're like a death sentence.
But it is a Premier League job, and it's the kind of job where I feel like if you didn't do well, no one would really blame you. You know,
you could Marco Silva it.
Yeah, you could Marco Silva it. And then my last thought on Newcastle is, Brandon, can I interest you in a $5 million John Joe Shelvey?
I have love in my heart for Jonjo Shelvey. You know, no one shapes the ball quite like Jonjo. I love his style. I love everything about him. I just love how weird he is. I'd love to hang out with him. Sure. Would I like to put him in my FPL team? I mean, Point of comparison, also a J name, Jorginho. Mm-hmm. How do you compare a 5 million Jorginho to a 5 million Jonjo?
Well, I think I'd rather have Jonjo. I mean, they don't have anyone to play in their attacking midfield, so
Jonjo at striker.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a 5 million out of position striker.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we just talked ourselves into it. All right, Jonjo is
Jonjo,
Captain Jonjo, game week one. All right, Brandon, that was six teams. That was 90 minutes. That was insane. I cannot believe how deep we just went on some of these teams.
We covered some hugely important teams for this season. So I hope some of that was insightful. We're not here to offer the 100% correct answer.
Sure.
But we're here to guide your thinking.
Yeah, or at least figure it out ourselves, and hopefully as we do. Yeah,
I'm here to guide you, and you're here to guide me.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, it's like as we talk about it, hopefully you can, like, if you're listening, you're like, okay, even if all you're doing is listening and just violently disagreeing with us, that's at least a way of forming an opinion, right? So, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So if you enjoy the Always Cheating podcast, we can't encourage you enough to pay a visit to our Patreon page, patreon.com/always cheating. Check out what we're offering there. And coming up right around game week one, that's when we're going to start our extra podcast every week for Patreon members at the Lord Sorloth tier and above. Oh, we didn't even mention, Josh, big news. Sorloth was named to Crystal Palace's traveling squad this summer.
It's so great.
Looking quite sure that Sorloth will be back in our lives and we don't have to completely discontinue our t-shirts from last year. But yeah, check out our Patreon page for what we have to offer. We appreciate all the thanks and support. Speaking of thanks, Josh, can you thank our producers?
I'd love to. Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Carl Rasmus, Laney Granley, Chris Howell, Martin Savage, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Brian T., Trevor Ingerson, Chris Carter, DeBig Gaffer, Babas Kuhn, Giraffe Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Oyvid Anderson, Jazz Binning, Andy Penn, Blair Jacobson, and Danny Evans.
Awesome. Yeah. And never miss a minute of Always Cheating. The preseason preview coverage continues. Coming up, our third in the three-part series of team previews, where we talk about Spurs. What other teams do we have left coming up?
I don't know, like seven of them.
Two promoted clubs, Norwich, Sheffield United, Spurs,
West
Wolves,
Ham,
lots of exciting teams.
Watford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So don't miss a minute. Subscribe to the podcast. Hit that subscribe button however you're listening. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. And if you're so kind, it helps us a lot. It helps our podcast get found by other FPL managers. Review us, rate us on iTunes. If you give us 5 stars, that's amazing. And give us a follow on social media, Twitter, @HailCheaters, Instagram, @HailCheaters, Facebook. It's facebook.com/alwayscheating. Email us with your lengthy questions at hailcheaters@gmail.com. And for all this information, including the Always Cheating Super League code, go to alwayscheating.com.
All right. Lord Sorloth, welcome back.
Welcome back. Praise Sorloth.
Praise Sorloth.